Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as one would say in Italy. Welcome to those who do not speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for our 181st episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. Don't panic. Don't panic. David is here. We just decided to keep you on your toes and switch seats. We got a great show lined up for you. No guests, but that's partly because we have a rare Friday edition of Winners and Losers, as we had a whole slate of Serie A on Wednesday, on Boxing Day. And we also have our usual game picks with Thousand Names and David looking ahead to this weekend in Serie A. But David, we got to do our job. Normally, in our first segment, we talk about football, actual football. But like I said, we got to do our due diligence and address what went on that stemmed from the Inter-Napoli game, the Koulibaly incident. I'm definitely not as informed as you are. I'm stuck in my Premier League bubble right now because there are also headlines of racism left and right in the Premier League. So if you could, inform me about this incident and then also give me your reaction to this Koulibaly incident.
So, Alex, thanks for kicking off the podcast. And yeah, I really wish we were talking about something else. You know, I wish we were talking about it because it was a rather exciting slate of games in Serie A. We have the January window coming. And to me, it's very frustrating because Serie A, there's been a lot of positive momentum for the league as a whole. And an incident like this really is a black eye for the league. And, you know, the worst part of this is I have to say, I can't say that I'm really surprised by what happened. So before I get into, you know, kind of some things that stood out to me on the situation, I just want to give a little bit of context. Obviously, people that watched the game saw that multiple times at San Siro on the PA system, there was announcements telling the fans to stop the racist chanting. And the referee didn't stop the match at any point. And then, of course, we saw Koulibaly get a red card and then a two-game suspension. So I just want to set a little bit of context because I know there's been a lot of reaction on why wasn't the game called? Why did Koulibaly get a two-game suspension, which on the surface really looks ridiculous. But before the match, there was some big clashes between fans of Napoli and Inter. I read the description in Gazzetta dello Sport, and I felt like I was reading like an episode description of Gomorra or some stuff like that. Pretty, you know, it's comprehensible in some ways that this has to do with football, but unfortunately, this is really not that uncommon. So a fan died before the match. I mean, he didn't die, I think, till the morning after, but he was not doing well. So they were very concerned to suspend the match altogether because they were afraid that there'd be even more violence. So I'm not justifying the decision or not, but that is part of the context. And if you know the rules, the referee can't really terminate the match. He can just send the fans of the locker rooms, and then it's up to the Questura, which is loosely based the police, the local police department in Italy, to determine if the match would go on or not. So for security reasons, they decided to keep the match going. Then Koulibaly got a yellow card first, then another yellow card, and then a two-match suspension. So it's important to note that for the two-match suspension, he got a one-match suspension because going into the last match, he was one yellow off from getting a suspension. So he got a one game for the first yellow, then his reaction to the referee, which, you know, the context, you can probably understand why he behaved that way, but that's why he got the two-match ban. So that's kind of the context of this. To me, this is a huge black eye for the league once again. Look, you know, we see racist incidents in other leagues as well, in Spain and the Premier League, but not like in Italy. Like, this is something very, very common. But I also think it's important that we distinguish between ultras and people that are in the curva and regular fans. I think the thing that really bothers me of the reaction there has been on Twitter, and I know that I sound like I'm on a high horse right now talking about this, but I really despise how fans of different teams are using these events that happened to Koulibaly as a way to make some self-righteous statements, some self-serving statements to promote their club's agenda. Like, look, this stuff happens pretty much in almost every stadium in Italy. Like, I go to see Padova a few times a year. I hate to say it, I see those racist type of chants pretty much every time that I go. We had it at Juve Stadium with Koulibaly. We had an incident with Matuidi in Cagliari. But this is very common. So for me, the fact that there's this parochial and partisan attitude and trying to rank who's worse than saying, well, this also happens in other stadiums, or even worse, like trying to do some whataboutism and compare it to other things. Today, the Minister of the Interior in Italy, Salvini, who is kind of like in the Trump mold of politician, you know, compared the racist chants to Bonucci getting insulted by Milan fans. And I've seen a lot of other fans like make this comparison that players are called sons of whores and all sorts of names during the match. And Koulibaly should have handled it better and not reacted. Like, I completely disagree with that. To me, something racist like that is on a whole other level. And trying to minimize it by comparing it to the more classics football that we see in calcio, that really bothers me. So to me, you know, if you're a fan of Serie A, regardless of the team that you support, I think the message, we should all unite and make it very simple. Like, the racism in stadiums in 2018, and we're going to be in 2019 next year. Like, come on, this isn't the Middle Ages anymore. We all need to unite. And I think any fan who tries to make it into a team issue to make a rival team look bad or be self-righteous about this team is really making the problem worse. If you're a fan of Serie A, this is just a black eye for the league, and we all need to combat it and not really get into, you know, which team's worse or whatnot. So I have to ask you, Alex, I know, you know, in England, you know, there's a lot of the stuff with Sterling that we see in the paper. There have been some incidents specific to some clubs. I don't really want to pick on any club per se, but to me, it seems in England, this is handled a little bit differently than Italy. So tell me a little bit kind of what you've observed. And now that you've been, you know, doing, I think you mentioned over 180 podcasts with me, I think you're getting more familiar with the football world in Italy. Like, do you see like a huge difference in how this is handled in England compared to Italy?
Yeah, I do see a difference for sure. So a couple weeks ago, you mentioned Raheem Sterling. A couple weeks ago, Chelsea played Manchester City at Stamford Bridge at Chelsea's home. And quite clearly, early on in the game, Raheem Sterling was about to take a corner. And I could see it easily on my TV watching NBC Sports. Four male individuals clearly were shouting something at Raheem Sterling. And later, after the game, they were identified. It wasn't that hard. Once again, they were blatantly on TV. So tweets and reports, requests saying, if you can help us identify these individuals, came out, and boom, they were identified and their names were identified, pictures of them. They had to give public statements. Hopefully it was very embarrassing, and it was publicly shaming them. So I do think that's a good way to go about it, because hopefully that will ensure that those individuals will never be dumb like that again. And then beyond that, hopefully others will learn, oh man, that could be me. I don't want to go to a game, be stupid like that, and then be identified for the whole world to see. Now, there should be other reasons to not yell racist things. Of course, we just shouldn't be racist, but that's diving into a whole nother subject for another day. So in terms of how it was handled, I think this is a more effective strategy, identifying the individuals, go straight to the individuals instead of just saying, yep, never mind, Chelsea fans can't show up for the next game. So I think that's a better method. Now, I do want to say it does become a little bit of a game of he said versus she said. These four individuals said, no, we didn't say anything racist. We definitely said some things we're not proud of, but we weren't racist. But nonetheless, they were publicly shamed. Now, last thing, and then I'll let you talk, David. Raheem Sterling did bring up a good point. A lot of this stems from how these players are covered by the media, by the newspapers, headlines. He brought up a great example of how a black player buying a house in England is much differently publicized than a white player buying a house in England. So it stems from way more than just fans being stupid at a game, but I think that's going to be, unfortunately, a bigger problem to fix that will take more time. So, David, in answer to your question on how it's handled, yeah, England is definitely handling it differently than Italy is.
Well, I definitely appreciate a lot of the points that you made on, you know, the differences, how white and black player are treated. But I will tell you the one thing that I really like about the approach in England is targeting the individuals who did the act. And I think this is so important. I'm really not a fan of closing the whole stadium, because to me, it's like, okay, you're saying we're going to punish the team They won't have the money from, you know, the gate receipt from the match. So then you're basically saying because the team is being punished, then they will police what happens in the stadium. And the way I see it, why do we need the middleman? Let's cut him out. We should go after the people that are doing this. To give you an example, they identified 9 fans who were part of the violence before the match between Inter and Napoli. They have the names. They identify them. They're going to be banned from the stadium. So for that, they took names and they hold the individual accountable. For the racist thing, it's like, no, we're going to ban the whole stadium. And look, the Inter fans, you know, I'm sure 98%, 99% behave great. We've seen how many of them always show up for the team, even when they're not doing particularly well, even in years past when they were worse than now. So to me, punishing the whole team is not a good idea. And the other thing is, I think now ultra groups now know that they have this leverage over the club, that they can say, hey, if you don't give us what we want, you don't show us respect, we're going to behave this way. We're going to shut down the stadium. You're going to lose the gate receipt. So to me, this is really a big problem. I'm a much bigger fan of targeting the individual as opposed to like doing a ban. To me, it just sounds like you're saying, okay, we took care of it, but yet the problem is going to keep happening. So listen, now I'm starting to feel like a Bono from U2. I feel like I've been on a high horse since last week too, where we were early in the week, we were talking about Christmas. So, and you know, and being depressed around the holidays, which I still all my good vibes go out to people that are struggling, but I feel that now we need to get back to calcio. So as you mentioned, Alex, we have some winners and losers. Let's talk about calcio. There were some great games aside from what happened to Koulibaly on Wednesday. So I'm going to put them in a little bit of a random order. Let's talk about the Juve match against Atalanta. We have Duvan Zapata, who's now scored 8 goals in the last 5 matches. While Atalanta didn't beat Juve, they have done really well against the top teams. Gazzetta dello Sport pointed out that so far this season, Atalanta has draws against Juve, Roma, and Milan, and they beat Lazio and Inter. So they've done really well. On Juve, of course, we had Ronaldo coming off the bench to save the day. On the Inter match, we had Lautaro Martinez coming off the bench with the game winner. And obviously, not a lot was talked about that. Obviously, Koulibaly being out of the game definitely had an impact. But shout out to Lautaro Martinez. I think the key thing for him is trying to find a way of playing next to Icardi as opposed to just being his backup and someone who comes in when they need a late goal. We had that very boring match between Milan and Frosinone, and probably not a good sign for Milan that the standout player for them in that match was Donnarumma, who I think, aside from the derby against Inter, and obviously that's a match with a lot of visibility, he's been really, really good this season. So then we had a big win for Roma, and they're starting to gain some momentum, so good for them. We have Patrick Schick, who did make the most out of the opportunity when Zeko was hurt, but at least scored a goal. It'll be interesting to see if Roma is going to still loan him out to gain his confidence, for him to gain confidence and regain his market value, or if they feel that now he can build off this goal and do well. We had Perotti's return, and as our friend John Solano pointed out, it wasn't surprising that Kolarov had his best game with Perotti playing in front of him on the left side. And then we had Brian Cristante, a player that, look, I haven't been shy on calling him Gasperini fool's gold and saying this is going to be another Atalanta player that goes elsewhere and doesn't do well. He's been making me eat my words. He's been really, really good the past few weeks. And what else is left to say on Zaniolo, a player that we've championed a lot on the podcast? Rare for me to get excited with a prospect, but what a goal, man. The guy just plays with so much swagger. I've said it before, kind of reminds me of Pogba, his first season at Juve. Then we had Torino with a big win against Empoli to keep him in the race for Europa League spot, another standout performance by Calcioland favorite Iago Falque. Then we had Quagliarella, who continues to score amazing goals. He's a winner. So Sampdoria, who's now ahead of Milan in the standing. The race to avoid relegation, Faria scored a huge goal for Cagliari in their match against Genoa. So well done by him. And the last shout out is on Lazio, who've been doing a lot better. We had defender Luis Felipe, who actually has been quite good defensively this season, scored his first goal in Serie A. And we had, of course, Simone Inzaghi beating his brother Pippo Inzaghi in Bologna. Now is really, really in trouble. I think you're going to see them being quite active during the January window. For the losers, goes without saying what happened at San Siro. That's just Serie A as a whole is a loser for that. And losers are anyone who's trying to make it into a parochial partisan issue, because this is a much bigger problem than Inter per se. Another loser is someone who used to play his home games for a season at San Siro, and that's Leonardo Bonucci. Feels like he's been responsible for like 70% of Juve's goals this season. Of course, his passing is still really important, but you got to wonder if he's been a net positive for Juve overall. Milan, as we mentioned, Higuain, his longest scoring drought in Serie A. We'll get to him when we talk about transfers in a minute. And we have Gattuso, who definitely is a loser in this match, because now it's four games that Milan has no goal, scored no goals, and they haven't won in three matches in a row. I think they only have one win in the past seven matches. Then we had Chievo, who had somewhat of a resurgence, had five draws in a row. They lose their first match in a while. And the last loser, I have Fiorentina, who should have built some positive momentum off their win at San Siro against Milan, but they didn't. And they end up losing to Parma, a team that's really doing quite well. So now we have games tomorrow as well. And our dear friend Thousand Names sent me in his picks. By now, you guys know how this works. Thousand Names picks the matches. I get to see what he picks ahead of time. And then I make my picks on that as well. So first one, Juve fans, get ready. He's coming at you as usual. Juve Samp, and this is going to be the match on ESPN with our friend Matteo Bonetti tomorrow. He has Sampdoria winning 1-0 in Turin with a goal by De Frel. Of course, the typical Ronaldo is going to miss a penalty. He says Giampaolo is going to destroy Allegri by playing calcio champagne. And he says that Juve is starting to feel Marotta's absence and that all the players have already their mind on vacation. So in Italian, Juve Samp 0-1, De Frel, Ronaldo sbaglia rigore. Giampaolo asfalta Allegri col calcio champagne. Juve che paga l'assenza di Marotta. Squadra con la testa alle vacanze. I'm going to go against 1,000. Sampdoria has been playing well, but they are a great home team, not so much away. I'm going to have Juve winning 2-0. I'll give another goal to Ronaldo and a goal to Pjanic. Next match, Lazio-Torino. 1,000 Names has Lazio winning 4-0. Goals by Immobile, Correa, Luis Alberto, and Lunic. And he says that Simone Inzaghi is going to continue to have this illusion that he's going to arrive in fourth place. And he says that Mazzarri is still paying from the bad referee decisions from the derby against Juve that have demoralized his team. In Italian, Lazio-Torino 4-0, Immobile, Correa, Luis Alberto, Lulic. Continua l'illusione di Simone Inzaghi di arrivare al quarto posto. Mazzarri paga ancora i torti arbitrali nel derby che hanno demoralizzato la squadra. I'm going to pick Lazio 2, not 4-0. They've been on a resurgence. I'm going to give Lazio 2-1. I'll give Milinkovic-Savic a goal. And I'll give Immobile a goal on Torino. I'll give Belotti. Let's try to get some momentum for Italian strikers. Last match, picked by 1,000 Names. Fiorentina travels to the Marassi Stadium to face Genoa. He has a 2-2. Goals by Kwame, Romolo, Virtu, Simeone. He says Lafont is going to save a penalty, and he says that Piontek is going to be massacred by the referees because the Italian system wants Ronaldo to lead the league in goals. And he said that the matchup between Prandelli and Pioli is a challenge between two players, two former players that Juve got rid of. And actually, I had to look it up. I remember Prandelli playing for Juve, but not Pioli. So both of them played for Juve. In Italian, Genoa, Fiorentina, 2-2. Kwame, Romolo, Virtù, Simeone, Lafont para rigore, Piatek massacrato dagli arbitri perché il Palazzo vuole Ronaldo capocannoniere, Prandelli, Pioli, sfida tra scarti della Juve. Genoa's been in trouble, man. They really have not done well ever since Ballardini left. That was still the worst decision I think we've seen in Serie A this season. But Fiorentina's been no picnic, so I'm going to have it as 0-0. It's been a while since our listeners sent in their picks, so if you want to pick against me and 1,000, go ahead. I have Juve winning. He has Samp winning. We both have Lazio beating Torino, and we both have Genoa Fiorentina as a draw. All right, Alex, before we get to our favorite part of the podcast, the Twitter questions from our listeners, let's give our shout out to our new friends, a product that both you and I enjoy. There's a lot of benefits to it. So tell our listeners about our new friends.
Yeah. So our friends are at BioCBD Plus. As we said on the previous episode, we're genuine guys. We're not going to shout something out we don't use or believe in. And David, we're both using it. We're both loving it. It is all these CBD products. And I didn't say it on the last episode, but just to give you an idea, if you don't know what CBD is, or you don't know what CBD maybe does, or the benefits, simply the benefits of taking CBD. So however you're doing it, whether you're using their vape pen, which is awesome, easy to use, you're using their topical oil, whatever it is, the benefits of CBD are pain, takes away pain, anxiety, inflammation, helps you with sleep, helps you with nausea, reduced muscle spasms, helps you with your appetite, protects your heart and lungs, treats and prevents TBI. It really does it all. It is simply a product that if you just take it every day, you're going to be healthier. You're going to be a healthier individual. And like I said on the previous one, you're feeling anxious, you're feeling stressed. It'll absolutely help with that. And it'll help with that not after 2 weeks, not after a month. It'll help with it right away. It really does work, I promise you. And like I said on the previous episode, I had a headache last week. It was bad. It was in my forehead, in my temples. I simply took their topical oil, put it on my forehead, and I kid you not, within minutes, my headache was gone. This stuff is really, really good. Some have even called it magical ointment, and I could go as far as to agreeing with that. And like we said, David, we both love the vape pen as well. So easy to use. You can use it wherever, discreetly, but then again, it's totally legal, so have fun with it. And how do you get this product? Well, BioCBDPlus.com is where you can find them. And to get 15% off on anything you want to buy from there, use our discount code CALCHOLAND15, all lowercase, CALCHOLAND15, 15% off. I really promise you, you will not regret it.
I'm a big fan too, and I'm with you. The topical oil is really great. I remember I had listened to a podcast that Joe Rogan has a great podcast. He had Ted Nugent on. Well, though he used to be a rock star, never used drugs in his whole life, and he had pain in his knees, and Joe Rogan gave him, you know, CBD ointment, and his knees were miraculously almost cured. And I've had that experience. Like, I'm older than you. I try to stay very physically active, but, you know, age is catching up to me. But that stuff really, really works. So like Alex said, you know, we don't recommend stuff that we don't believe in. So definitely check it out.
Well said, David. All right, let's get to our favorite part of the podcast, our wonderful Twitter questions. So, David, the first Twitter question, of course, we have the January transfer window knocking on the door, so it's only logical we start with this one. Which player could join Juventus in January?
Yeah, I actually think Juve is not going to be that active in January, especially acquiring players. I know there's a lot of fans that would love for them to get a difference maker in the midfield. I think Juve is very happy with what they've seen from Rodrigo Bentancur so far. I don't think Pjanic's had a particularly great season. I'm not his biggest fan compared to a lot of other people, but obviously he's still a certainty. Obviously, we had Emre Can, who came back a few weeks ago, looked quite good against Atalanta. We have Allegri favorite Sami Khedira back. So I think they're pretty happy with what they have there. Also, today Cuadrado had his surgery. He'll be out for a little while, but Cancelo should be back right away, right after the break. I think Juve is going to be more active on the outgoing side of things. We could see Spinazzola be loaned. I could see him and Moise Kean actually go to Bologna, a team that Juve has a good relationship with. Orsolini is there now. So if Juve makes an incoming move, it probably have to be another injury. It would be a minor one. Even say something like a Thomas Rincon-like move would surprise me. I just think Juve fans don't rate Khedira nearly as much as Allegri does. So maybe they don't see him coming back from the injury as a plus, but I'm sure Allegri does.
All right, David. Next Twitter question. What's the latest on Milan's transfers? Could Sensi be a good fit?
Yeah, so today, I know a lot of Milan fans were very upset with the lack of communication from Leonardo and Maldini, and that they kind of left Gattuso alone. So today, we're recording this on Friday. Leonardo spoke a lot, and Leonardo's Milan sporting director, on the transfer. So a couple of things, you know, and I take all quotes on transfers with a grain of salt, but there was some pretty insightful things. But keep in mind that Leonardo, he denied there was a deal for Higuain and Bonucci for a very long time until basically 2 days before it happened. So take it with a grain of salt. But a couple of things that he said is that Higuain and Bakayoko staying, because there are those big options to buy, are contingent on Milan making the Champions League. On Higuain, you know, he was pretty vague. He said Juve owns him, and, you know, no team has asked for him, and he hasn't asked to leave. Again, remember, the party line at Milan last summer was like Bonucci never asked to leave, and then 2 days later, he's gone. And also, when a director says no team has contacted us, keep in mind the vast majority of the time, teams go through an intermediary, so it's a wink, wink type of lie. And he also said, you know, we're only going to keep the players that want to stay, and maybe Higuain isn't that thrilled, but he did point out that it's Juve's decision because they own him. If you're confused by the whole situation, we talked a lot about it on the previous episode. The last thing that was really interesting that he said was on Paqueta, the Brazilian player that arrived, and he's going to be part of the team in January. He said that when they signed him for $30 million, they got a letter from UEFA saying, what are you doing? You shouldn't be spending all this money. And they got a fine. And he said, we're not going to be able to spend much more. So, you know, this is a valid point. I see a lot of Milan fans saying, hey, you know, maybe seeing the state of the team investing so much in a young player who's arriving from abroad isn't the smartest thing. And I think this is a valid point. And I think Leonardo, look, I praised him a ton. I wrote a great article, not a great article for the content, but an article praising him on The Athletic. We praised a lot of the moves, Laxalt, Caldara, Bakayoko, you name it. But so far, honestly, really, Bakayoko is the only one that you can really say has worked out. As far as Sensi, he plays at Sassuolo. Look, Milan isn't going to be able to buy players, but they could do those two-year loans with option to buy. Keep in mind, Milan and Sassuolo completed the deal for Locatelli on loan with option to buy last summer. Maybe they do something like that with Sensi. I think Sensi is a much better player than Locatelli at the beginning of the season. I challenge people saying, look at the over-under for Locatelli starts is going to be 19, and I think I'm on track to win that one. I think Sensi is a better player. I'm not surprised Sensi's playing over him at Sassuolo. He's kind of a small, creative midfielder. There was a lot of hype on him 2 years ago when he arrived at Serie A. So pretty good player. I think an intriguing – I think he's a better option, say, than Mauri or Bertolacci for sure. But more of a stopgap solution. But look, you know, the race to finish fourth is going to be really intense. As we said, you know, quote that Obama used to tell his staff is better is good. And I think Cincy would be better than what Milan has right now.
David, you mentioned Bakayoko in that answer. I do want to say I joke a lot about how lost Bakayoko looked at the end of last year in a Chelsea shirt, in preseason in a Chelsea shirt, and then even in the beginning stage at Milan this year, how lost he looked. But I do want to say good for him. Good for him, honestly. It is really tough when you've lost your confidence to then find it again. And he has, and I am happy for him that he is succeeding at Milan. With all of that said, still don't want him coming back to Chelsea, but it really isn't personal. Just more, I don't think he would fit in the system. And hey, Milan deserve him. He really is playing quite well for them. So, David, next Twitter question. With rumors of Mino Raiola becoming his new agent, could Christos Manolas leave Roma for Manchester United?
Yeah, so this is an interesting one. So to me, when I heard the news, Raiola, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I know a lot of people reported it, so I'm going to assume that it is true that Raiola is now Manolas' agent. I saw a lot of people made a big deal of it. But Raiola has been involved with him in the past. Actually, Raiola brokered the deal to bring him from Greece to Roma. Like a lot of times agents like that, even if they're not the agent of the player, they just have a lot of contacts in the market. And Raiola has the Dutch and the Greek market down pat. So he kind of helped him come to Roma. So I didn't see it as a huge game changer. But look, what's interesting about Manolas is he does have a reasonable exit clause. I don't think it's valid in January. I think it's $36 million. Look, you know, if you told me, you know, Koulibaly, I would say, you know, has anything changed with the racism and Napoli not being in the Champions League? No, like Koulibaly is not going to leave in January. I think in general, Manolas is much more attainable than Koulibaly, but I have a feeling Roma is going to want to hold on to him at least through the season to try to finish in the top four. But Raiola being more involved with him is a good thing for Manchester United. We know he's done a lot of deals with them. So I wouldn't be surprised. Like, actually, if I had to bet, I would say next summer, I really could see Manolas in the Premier League, not necessarily Man United. But I think he's one player that a lot of people expected Roma to already sell. So let's see what happens. I don't think it'll be January, though.
Okay. All right, David. Next Twitter question. How do you envision DeFrancesco finding time for Zaniolo, Pellegrini, and Pastore since they all seem to strive in the Troy Quartista role?
When I got this question, it really dawned on me, my God, how bad was the Nainggolan deal for all involved except for Zaniolo? And the reason I say it is Roma invested a lot. The money they received from Inter and essentially bringing in Pastore at a very high salary, he's been injured, which nobody's surprised by. And then Pellegrini takes off playing in the trequartista role once Pastore goes down. Zaniolo's done pretty well in that role. So I don't know. I think if Roma could do it over and keep the money and use it towards their financial fair play and not buy Pastore and just have Pellegrini there, I think they'd be really happy. As far as Zaniolo, I've said it before. I think he's a mezzala. That's going to be the role he's going to strive in. He's done well as a trequartista. But I think in the midfield, like in a three-man midfield playing on the left or the right of a regista, I think that's really where his role is. I've said it before. I really see comparisons to Pogba at Juve, similar body type, ability, swag. They just have a lot in common. So the way I see it, shake it out, is I see Zaniolo in the midfield and Pellegrini playing more in the trequartista when Pastore is not hurt. And Pastore, you know, maybe he, when healthy, can be an option with Pellegrini. That's how I see it shaken out there.
All right, David, next Twitter question. This is an interesting one. If you could replace DeFrancesco, Spalletti, and Gattuso with only Gasperini, De Zerbi, and Gimpalo, who would you place where and why?
Great question from our friend John Lamorte. I love this question because I really put a lot of thought into it. This is a complete hypothetical, so I have to replace DeFrancesco, Spalletti, and Gattuso with Gasperini, De Zerbi, and Gianpaolo. So I tried to do the most logical thing. So I'm going to say De Zerbi to Roma, not realistic, because the previous Di Francesco came from Sassuolo. It's been a little bit up and down. So hypothetically, I think it would look terrible to replace Di Francesco with another former Sassuolo manager. I like De Zerbi, so I'm going to put him at Inter. I'm going to put Gianpaolo at Milan. And the reason I'm going to put him there is Milan back in the day, like a big, you know, sideways moment for them was when instead of hiring Sarri, they went for Mihailovic. And Gianpaolo is kind of a somewhat of a Sarri clone. He replaced them at Empoli and at Sampdoria has been doing a lot of the same things. Gianpaolo is really good at developing players, and I think he'd be a good fit. And I'm going to put Gasperini at Roma, A, because he already had a cup of coffee at Inter. It didn't work out there. But I think Gasperini would be perfect to go full supermarket mode for Roma. You have Gasperini and Monchi. Monchi finding the talent. Gasperini developing the talents like he did at Atalanta, increasing their transfer value, and then selling them for big money. So that's how I have it shaken out, because Gasperini and Monchi is just supermarket central. So I think that works quite well. So thanks to John for his support and the great question. I would love getting more of these types of questions.
All right, David, let's move away from football, shall we? For iconic classic movies, do you prefer a long overdue sequel or a reboot as a movie or a TV show?
Great question. This is a tough one because, you know, I'm really intrigued by the idea of making old school movies into like Netflix series. One of my favorite podcasts is The Rewatchables, Bill Simmons, Sean Fantasy over at The Ringer. And this is something they talk a lot about when they go over some older movies and talking about what they would look like as a Netflix series. So I would really like to see that. Like imagine Jaws as like a series or things like that, or even The Godfather as a series. Obviously, in a TV show over 8-10 episodes, you can really stretch out the characters a lot more instead of a 2-3 hour movie. So I'm kind of intrigued by that. As far as like doing sequels after a long time that the movie's been out, I think that's kind of fun. We saw it on TV, like there was that show Twin Peaks, and 20 years later, David Lynch did a sequel and made it a lot more modern. I think that's kind of cool. So we really live in the golden age of content. There are so many different ways to pump out content that I kind of like the idea of making old movies into TV shows, because I feel like the reboot of like a great classic movie, redoing it as like a 2-3 hour movie, like what's the point? Just watch the original.
Fair enough. All right, David. Next Twitter question. What is your favorite Strokes album and song?
So, by the way, we got a lot of pop culture questions. I really appreciate it. I'm not going to answer them all today. We're going to save some for Monday. So thanks for those that sent them in. So actually, I'm a big fan of the Strokes. I think they're one of the best bands from the new millennium. For me, their best album is simple. It's their debut album, Is This It? It's a great record. You know, I like to say there are some debut albums that sound like greatest hits records right away. Like Oasis, definitely maybe, falls under there. And guess what? This Is It sounds like a greatest hits album because in a way it kind of is. A lot of the songs have very familiar melodies you heard from other bands and other songs. And this is something we see with Oasis as well. The breakout single for the Strokes, Last Night, which is the song that really put them on the map, is pretty much a copy of Tom Petty's American Girl. If you ever listen to those two songs back to back, it's really incredible how similar they are. The Strokes kind of owned it when they did a festival a while back in Spain. They basically started singing Last Night with the lyrics from American Girl. So they're in on the joke. A lot of the songs on that album, though, sound very familiar. I also like their second album, Room on Fire. It's quite good. As far as their best songs, there's like three of them from their first album, This Is It, that I really like. And that's Modern Age, which kind of sounds a little bit like AC/DC's Who Made Who, especially the guitar solo. Barely Legal, really good track there. And then there's another song that isn't on the original pressing of the album called New York City Cops. And the reason it isn't on the original album is that This Is It came out right after 9/11. And that song, obviously, with what happened with the cops dying in the building, they didn't release it. But if you're a Strokes fan, that is a classic. On the second album, Room on Fire, the two excellent songs are Reptilia and Has No End. A really cool band. I'm a fan of the Strokes. I have to say, of all the bands I really like, they're probably the only one I haven't seen live, and I hope they do a reunion tour at some point.
All right, David. Last Twitter question. What is your take on the movie that is definitely on Netflix? And David, correct me if I'm wrong, I've also seen it in theaters, Roma.
Yeah, well said, Alex. So yeah, it is both in theaters and Netflix. So when we had our friend Andrew Barker on, we were talking about the movies. He said this is his favorite movie from the past 5 years. And he really suggested that I go see it in the theater. And I'm glad I did because it's tempting. It's there on Netflix. You can watch it anytime. And this is a Mexican movie that takes place in Mexico City in the early 70s during a student revolt. It's about a wealthy family that's going through a lot of changes. It's directed by Alfonso Cuarón, which did the Gravity movie. A really unbelievable movie. Really, really powerful. For one, the images are absolutely incredible. Just the opening shot, which is basically like water on, I don't even know how to explain it, on a sidewalk, on just cleaning like a sidewalk. It's really pretty powerful. It's all in black and white. Some really powerful images that really stand out to you. There are, you know, a few emotional gut punches throughout the movie. And I will say some of them feel a little bit on the nose, but because they are set up so well, They are just incredibly powerful. So I really enjoyed it. You know, if you're really, really a movie buff, go see it in the theater. But if not, I think you'll really enjoy it on Netflix as well. So this is our show for today. I want to thank everyone who sent in questions. We have more episodes next week. So keep the questions coming. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with your friends. Tweet about us. Leave us a review. As you know, those are really helpful. And we look forward to chatting with you next week.